Standing at the hanging site on December 26th, 2012, and watching the riders come in, there was such power and beauty and ceremony and sacredness to that time and that place. And I would encourage all of you, if you can, this December 26th, take a drive to Mankato and be there as these riders come in. It is an incredibly powerful and beautiful time. And, you know, Mankato's 90 miles away. You can get there in an hour and a half. I would encourage everyone, if you're able, to be present and experience that. And not just Mankato. You can find out where the ride's at anywhere along the way. Stop, help serve food, talk with the riders, the people present. It is a beautiful, wonderful time. I want to thank my relatives, Jim and Alberta, for being here. It is truly an honor to have them here. I have had the pleasure to know them for about 2 years now, and whenever I spend time with Jim, I always joke that I hear I love you from him more than I do my wife. You see that in the film, and the film truly reflects his heart. So would you please welcome Jim and Alberta.
I'm Alberta Ironcloud, and I'm from Porcupine, South Dakota. And this thought came to me toward the end of the film that I am so full of gratitude, and that next to love, having gratitude is the greatest gift. And I'm full of gratitude because I get to be here. I get to stand before all of you. I get to travel from home. I'm able to travel. I'm healthy enough to travel. And I'm just so, so grateful, because I truly believe that Creator chose Jim to have this dream, gave him the dream. And I truly believe that the Dakota ancestors wanted more for their people over here in Minnesota. We didn't know anything at all about this hanging at the time that Jim had the dream. We knew nothing. And so when he started telling, he told three people about it, then they said, oh, that must be that hanging over there in Mankato. And we said, what? We never knew anything about it. And so that's my gratitude, is to be part of his life and to be able to help him to carry the message. And not just to non-Dakota people, but to Dakota people too, because the Dakota people have suffered so much with the displacement. We've gone all over to reservations where the Dakota, once they exiled, the other people pulled them in and saved their lives. So on our reservation, we have 700 Dakota people who have ancestry from over here on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And those Dakota people are all very strong Presbyterians. The Presbyterian influence is still really strong. And I was explaining that to our friend Jim, that the Episcopal Church has pretty much died out, but really the Presbyterian Church is still going strong. So that's all I wanted to say, and just to thank all of you for taking time to come and to watch this film. And we just encourage you to spread the message, because this is truth. We all know that our Creator is truth, and that the only way a lot of our people are going to be able to walk hand in hand is if we all walk truth, in light, and that this is part of Minnesota's history, and it's also one of Minnesota's greatest secrets. And so I believe that our Creator wants us to uncover the secrets, you know, and to open the doors to healing and to love. And I like what Jim Bear said about Jim O saying, "I love you," because he's been saying that at home. And where we come from, there's a lot of macho men. And I was telling him, I said, all of a sudden I'm really hearing that all these guys are saying, "Love you, man. Love you, man." And I said, they never used to say that. So I said, I think Jim started something there too. But I just want to thank you and tell all of you that I love you. I believe that if we all carry that message and that hope, that we're going to really bring healing to our world, because we really need it now. We really, really need it now. We're really involved at home with bringing awareness about fracking, you know, about having clean water, clean air, clean earth. So where we also do that, you know, besides being involved with carrying this message. So I just want to encourage all of you to, you know, step out of your comfort zones and, you know, reach out to learning more about who you are, who the people were before you here, and to embrace, you know, embrace and love all people. I know we know a lot about racism, and so we don't give any power to it, but we just want to encourage people to, if you have that feeling or you have that thought about Indian people or Native people, you know, that we're all drunks or that we're all lazy or whatever, that that it's not that way. We come from really hard working, responsible people. And the visitors who came to our home about a week ago, was that? 2 weeks ago. They've come to our home and they can attest to seeing, you know, the power of the people in on our reservation too. So I love all of you. Wopila chichap.
I don't even know what to say. I just got a big lump in my throat, you know. So driving across here today is really emotional, kind of emotionally charged day for me. I just want to thank all the, my beautiful relatives for inviting us here, and I feel a lot of gratefulness for your hospitality, your love, your respect. My sister last year, she contracted cancer, and that's a dirty word for all of us. Care if you're white, pink, or red, or gray, or black, or what? That's a scary word. And she went through surgery, and she came through it, and we prayed both in the church way and our way, and she's cancer-free. So she's putting on a Sundance in 2 weeks. And she asked me to run it last week. And this old boy is not a spring chicken anymore. And so that's why kind of we're out here, you know. We come out to not only show the film, but reconnect with our relatives that came to our home. And get some recipes. Don't forget recipes. So, you know, at this time, we'll take your questions. There's no stupid questions. You know, if you want to ask either of us a question, you know, about the ride or about the Sundance or whatever it is you got on your plate. But I'd really, I guess I would, you know, we're finding out that we're more like each other than we are different. You know, we eat the same foods, we wear the same clothes, we pray at the same place, we do all these things. You know, so that's why I love you guys. And this is why I believe the Creator gave me the dream, is to come out and share and to, you know, help wherever I can. So don't be afraid to ask me or my dear partner here, for if I can't answer it, she will. I know that guy back there.
Greetings. I'm LaShella Sims. I'm an organizer with MICA. And I'm also, I must admit that I have known very little about the Indian culture or history, kind of until I came here. I've had four different experiences and they've been very powerful. But I heard you mention that you were in the military in Vietnam. And one of the things, and I come from a military family, one of the question that I have you along those lines, has the government or this country at some level acknowledged the Native presence in that war or any wars at this time?
That's a good question. Is it on my own, am I hot there? You hear me? Yeah, that's a real good question, and I really don't know how to answer it, but everything that, when we were discharged, post-traumatic stress disorder, that came from us. You know, we fought that. So everything in the court system, we had to fight to gain recognition, not only as natives, but as veterans. If there's any veterans in here from that era, they could attest to that. But from that, we got our own cemeteries, you know, and I'm not going to brag here, but this, if you read any history about the military, the Native race is the highest decorated and the most people that enlist freely for this country. So I think that should... Sister, I think that's America as far as... I don't want to get political here. In the house of God.
I was just... first, welcome and thank you for coming here tonight. This was new to me, hearing this story. And I'm wondering if in Mankato, if there is any marker or any information at the site where this happened, as sort of a memorial for it?
They put a white buffalo there. And the actual place where they hung them was like a half a mile from it along the river. And they... but that's all that's there, right downtown. And now the different Dakota tribes... Or from here, are putting in their own, they got the names up, and they have the different things up, but the city of Mankato is called Makato, but they didn't know how to say that, and that's blue earth or black earth. So you see the soil here in Minnesota, how it's almost like, what do you call that stuff you buy from the store to help your plants grow? Yeah, almost like that. That's how rich the soil is here. And that's what Mankato, Makato. So yeah, that's all. Until we got this dream, I received the dream, and then people start to pay homage and heed to that.
Hello, thank you so much for coming. This movie is very moving. It's the second time I've seen it. And I think you learn more every time you see it. But I don't know what the Sundance is. Could you explain that ceremony? You said that your sister was going to host one.
Yeah, that's like I said, I'm no spring chicken. I'm 65, and I accepted the Chinupa say me and Jim Bear had an old van he wanted to sell me, would sign a contract. You know, and would have two or three people witness. And I pay so much a month. In our way, it's a passing of the Chinupa, the sacred pipe. And the sacred pipe stone comes from Pipestone, Minnesota. That's where our sacred pipe stone comes from. And the wood's usually an ash wood, so each one that each of us carry individually is like the Bible. It's like the Bible, and we have seven laws that we follow. Not like the 10 laws of the Christian. Ours are they're very simple, and they guard your life throughout life. They guide you throughout life, and we're supposed to practice them before we die. One is a hunka, making of relatives. One is the inipi, that, who all sweat with me? All these people that sweat with me came in the sweat with me. That's one of them. And becoming a woman, ishnati, it's called throwing of the ball. So women have ceremonies. So when I take a young man under my wing, his voice changes, and he becomes a man. So there's all these rules and regulations for him. So the Sundance is one of them. And it's one of the sacred ceremonies that we have where they offer me the Chinupa, and I prepare myself for it. And we believe in signs, visions, and dreams, like the dream up here. You act on it because you believe that the Creator gave it to you in your when you were asleep. The Creator talks to you. That's the way we believe. So, as to say Wopila, a thank you, she didn't know what else to do. So she put up a Sundance in Thanksgiving. And she brought the pipe to me to run it. Because I'm gifted to do that. So all these kids or these young men or these people that come to me, I tell them, you prepare for 1 year before you get out in that arena. So the first day, you go after the sacred tree. You go out, you give it a name. You have these warriors say a war deed over it, and then you have these virgins touch that tree. You chop it down, you bring it back, you erect it, and the next day you dance. So the vows you personally make to the Creator are hanging on that tree. In the Bible it says, this, you'll stumble on me, the rock. I'm the rock, you'll stumble on me. I'm that bright fire. What does it take to burn, to make a bright fire? It takes wood. It also says in the Bible, I am the tree of life. So that's what we use. We use all of them elements. We use all of them elements, and we make our own vow. My vow is next year we're having a ride clear across the country. Starting in Oregon, that's what I am praying for. That nothing will get in the way. That there's no, and we're riding right to Obama's White House. because we don't want our land desecrated. We don't want, we want our grandkids to have water. So when an elder gets up to pray, he's just not praying till next Sunday. He's praying seven generations down the road. So somebody prayed for me seven generations back. And that's why I could stand before you here. Somebody already prophesied over me. Somebody already called me out. Somebody put their finger on me and says, Jim, this is what you're going to do. That's why I'm here. This is why, huh? I'm done.
Us women, we women are really detail-oriented, and I'm just going to add a little bit. Our Sundance is a four-day ceremony, and it's a time of fasting. It's fasting from food and water, and it's dancing, coming out and dancing the sun up, you know, at daybreak, dancing when the sun is coming up. And we do that for 4 days, and it's just in a private, enclosed area. And so that's the sacred, one of the sacred ceremonies that Jim was describing that was given to us by the White Buffalo Calf Woman. So the Sundance is really female guided and oriented, because the ceremony was brought by a woman. So the women have a real strong role in this prayer time. So that's what we do for 4 days of prayer. And it's real, it's very strong. It's a very strong prayer time. So that's all I wanted to add. Thank you.
Well, sisters fired up back there. Turn to Proverbs 20.
Not to monopolize the conversation, but I think everyone needs to know historically the value of the Native people. And I noticed in the film you mentioned about the boarding schools, and it reminded me the irony of some of the Native experiences in the boarding schools in regards of the teachers or whatever wanted to change Natives' language to be Americanized. Well, and the irony is that the work that the, not to take away from the Dakota history, but the, I think it was the Navajos, the code breakers, I think they were called, and how they were instrumental in World War II in their real high position, a real thing that they did in terms of helping America win the war. I think the Japanese were able to break the codes that the Americans had in regards to what they were doing and things like that. And then someone reached into the Navajo community and asked them to come up with, in their own language, to come up with a code that the Japanese could not break. And that's what they did in regards to helping the Americans win the war. And I think last year was the death of the last, as the military stuff came across my desk, the last surviving coder died. And so I don't think a lot of people know and realize that in terms of the value of Native Americans in regards to our history.
Just to clarify a little bit, the Navajos are the ones who get celebrated the most as code talkers, but there were code talkers from many, many different tribes across the country, Lakota being one, Dakota. The last code talker didn't die last year. I believe it was the last Lakota code talker who died. So there are still other code talkers from other tribes that are still alive. Yeah. Sorry.
You did good.
Oh, good.
You did good. I'll talk to you in the parking lot.
Yeah, I was wondering, I don't think there was any filming going on in the 1800s. So when was that reenactment of the hanging, when was that done?
That's from a Swedish film company, and we gracefully got the rights from them, from their descendants. And well, while I'm at it, I'll say this. That whole documentary was faith-based. When I first got the dream, and after the 44 years that I wrote, in 2008 this was filmed, but we didn't have the money to put it out there. So all them people that are on the bottom there are donors. And all the people that made the music, all the people that, you know, helped us with this, with the maps, they did it on their own time. So we contacted this, to answer your question, we contacted this Swedish film company that came to Minnesota and did that reenactment, and they had the old footage. They had the old footage, and they, and people think that's real, you know, back then. But actually, they were supposed to hang 300 and some. But Lincoln, in his term as president, he wheeled and dealt with the people here. But Minnesota was so angry and so ticked off, they wanted something done. So that's why they scaled it down to 38. And the 38 that were hung, probably two out of them were guilty. They had a military trial. So all that was military back then. So that's kind of a long, round, heck of a long, roundabout way about answering a simple little question. So everything we got was... I didn't even know there was going to be a documentary. It just came. It just fell into place. Meeting the right people. God works through people. God works through people. Don't forget that. God will direct you to these people. To the right people. And that's what I find out in my 32 years of sobriety. He directed me to the right people. Out of prison. You know, out of Vietnam. Strung out on drugs. He called me out. He said, son, you're going to get sober and you're going to work for me. So that's what I do today. Religion's for people who want to get to heaven. Spirituality is for a guy like me that's already been to hell and back. So, growing up, people say, gee, Jim, how come you got that name Miller? My name is Mueller. My great-grandparents, my grandpa, my great-grandpa was in Hanover, Germany. He was a mayor in Hanover, Germany. He sent 9 of his sons as stowaways to America. All Nations Church. He sent 9 of his sons to America as stowaways. He sold everything over there to bring his 9 sons over here. 2 of them came out to the Dakotas. And I asked the old boy, my grandpa. My grandpa was a senior ward dean for the Episcopal Church. Boy, I'm talking to any Germans here, but you know what Germans are. The old boy had that corn, I never did see him without that corn cob pipe. You know, he laid back, wear top boots and moccasins. My grandpa come out here, he learned the language. He learned Lakota. He learned English. He could talk low German. And he learned sign language. Because in a freak accident, my grandma lost her hearing. My grandpa was also the midwife. He was also the veterinarian. And this guy didn't even have a third grade education. But he was a senior warden at the church where we attended. So everything was done in Lakota. All the scripture was read in Lakota. The hymns were sung in Lakota. So you see me take my hat off. I learned that when I was this high. My grandpa told the family, he said, I don't want to see no drunkards in this church, and I don't want no gossiping in this church. That's what he told the congregation. Sure as heck, here come my flamboyant uncle, Uncle George. Back in the horse and buggy days, he rode horseback up there, he was drunk. My grandpa whipped him off the church ground. That's how strict they were. He'd say to me, grandson, you better get out there and fill that wood box. Whereas on the other side, my Indian grandpa would say, grandson, you think that's going to be enough wood for tonight? Man, you're thinking, you know? So I learned the work ethic from them. Get up in the morning and milk 6 cows by hand. Not no milker. Milk them 6 cows by hand. And then walk to school or ride horseback. So that's the way. So going to school, going to the boarding school and having a name like Miller, everybody thinks I'm a white guy. I'm fighting all these Indians. I'm just as dark as them. You following me? Am I making any sense here? So that's what happened in my life. So I grew up with a chip on my shoulder, angry, mad, and living on the edge, riding bulls, you know, wanting to die. Come out of Vietnam and so much shame, so much guilt, you know. So that's where our terminology started, this whole PTSD movement. Everybody in here has got PTSD to a certain degree. You know, but we hide it so well. Oh, man, put that suit on. Let's go to church. But we'll beat the shit out of that cat when you get home. Kick that dog when you get home. You know, so we're finding we're more like each other. I don't see anybody in here but God's children. That's all I see. We're all God's children. I don't see no color, no gender. So I'm going to do everything that I possibly can. How many believe in past lives here? Anybody? One man. Two. Three. Okay, the Creator will send you back till you do everything right. We're spiritual people here, living the human experience. We're spiritual people living the human experience. So He'll send you back. And if you're prejudiced against a certain race, He'll probably send you back as that color. So think about it. Something to think about. I like to stir the pot every once in a while. It's something to think about. And I learned them things the hard way. I had to learn them things the hard way. So I try to carry that love to everybody, especially the women. The women are really honored in our culture. The women, the Chinupa comes through the women. They ain't less than. We come from a matriarchal system. So when I got married, I went to where they live. We still have that. It's across the board. So I'm not getting too wild yet, sister. You still with me?
I probably won't get this opportunity again, so I'm asking questions. And I just learned about I think it's called the Doctrine of Discovery. And you were speaking a lot of the faith aspect. And I wondered, I don't think a lot of people may know what the doctrine of discovery is, and I wonder if that affected the cult, or if you have, if that has been, any of that has been brought down through the years. And for the doctrine of discovery, it's still alive today, and I think as the United States was evolving and different countries were coming over, when they discovered various Indians, the covenant or the doctrine said that any other foreign nations that came over could not deal or take the tribes that had already, that like if the French came over first and the English came over, the English could not take over or rule the Native Americans that the French had discovered first. And I've been hearing about it, there was at Metro State and then at Hamlin in regards to some people have natives have written a book about it. And they are in the process of trying to getting that erased, and they've even gone to the Vatican in regards to, I think it's on in Catholic doctrine someplace, to get that kind of erased. But I guess I was surprised to hear about it, and even more surprised that it's still on the books that far back.
You know, that's a powerful deal there. I'm going to give this one to my beautiful partner. She knows more about that stuff than I do.
That was actually the foundation of the movement to take all of our land, you know, the manifest destiny. That, and you're right, it's never been addressed, but the churches are addressing it now. I read that recently that the Episcopal Church nationally is opposed to that, and it's slowly gaining momentum to have that addressed, the papal bulls, they call it. So there's also a movement to have the state of Minnesota remove the law that has a bounty, that there's still a bounty on Dakota heads. That's still on the books. And in Congress, the 1863 Dakota Exclusion Act is still on the books. And that was the congressional act that ordered the removal of all Dakota people from Minnesota. So there's a lot of old business that has to be taken care of.
Thank you so much. Something you said, I think in the video, if I'm remembering right, is we don't need to blame the Washichu anymore. We're doing this to ourselves. With the drug dealing. And when Native hands deal drugs to other Natives, is that also white hands doing the dealing through the Native hands that are dealing the drugs? Like, in what ways is it still Washichu's dealing drugs, even if it's a Native person dealing them? Is there a systematic, or in what ways is there, and in what ways isn't there, whiteness still doing those actions, or still keeping Natives down through the things that Natives are doing to each other? And as a Washichu myself, am I there too? Am I dealing those drugs as well? And can I be forgiven for that too? I don't know. There's a lot of questions in there, but that's some of my thoughts.
I think that's really that's a real important question or a thought, because from our aspect, from where we sit, we look at what's happened to us, this historical trauma. We've been traumatized historically with every generation, and that when alcohol was introduced, it was introduced by the traders, which the government allowed because we were always under government control, so they allowed the traders to come in and set up near where the Indians, you know, the native people were camped or where the forts were. And that's where this disease or spiritual disease or whatever people call it, that addiction, that's where it started. But with each generation, it got to be something else. And so like with the drugs, where we come from, a lot of it is coming from the Mexican mafia. And that in my previous years, I was a judge, a tribal court judge, and I was also a prosecutor. And we worked closely with the FBI and with DEA, all the federal agencies. But the Mexican mafia and the Mexican cartels, they identified the reservations as a good place to do business because of the addiction, because of the alcoholism, and because of we have our own set of laws. So these pipelines were coming up through Denver, you know, and into the Pine Ridge Reservation, out on the I-90 corridor, coming from here, you know, from Minneapolis, from Denver, from the cities. So it's, when we look at it, we look at it as ourselves. We try to encourage our young people to look at themselves as natives and to be proud of their culture and who they are, and that they don't need to oppress their sisters and brothers by drug dealing, by helping to put them down. So that's our perception of it. So I don't know, it's just kind of a, I think it's kind of a worldview, or, you know, that we have about ourselves. There's a lot of people like Jim and I who are drug and alcohol free and who really push for our young people to be the same and not to bring our people down, because the way we look at it is that we've allowed and we were powerless to do to live in a way that we wanted to, that was natural. So it's like the oppressor and the oppressed, and it changed hands with each generation. So now our own people are oppressing each other with the help of the Mexican mafia. So that's how it is in where I come from, but it could be different with other reservations. Here in Minnesota, I don't know how it is, if it's the same. I don't know. Did that help you any?
I just like saying it this way. It's like Auschwitz. After the war ended, the survivors, the Jews that survived, their offspring, they didn't have PTSD. But every one of their offspring that left and got married, every one of them had PTSD. That's a proven fact. We learned that in PTSD when we went to treatment. The different levels and where did they come from and things like that. So, like, not to put down the blacks or the Mexicans or the Orientals, a lot of that's coming, the drugs are coming from there too. They're dealing it, you know. So one of the greater things that I got to do with this film took me to Australia. And you think we got beat up over in this country. The Aborigines over there, they didn't want to waste a bullet on them. So they took them out in boats and threw them off. Took them up to the mountains and threw them off. So I guess where I'm going here is, for me, you know, the Creator intervened in my life. God intervened in my life, and he got me out of prison. When I was in Leavenworth, there were 3 deaths a week. And the skinniest guy in there would kill you for a carton of cigarettes. And the mafia in there ran Leavenworth. They were dealing drugs. They were opening doors. So we have to take a long look at our justice system. Justice today ain't justice. Justice is when you get a conviction. Because your skin pigmentation is a little bit darker. Get him, he's guilty. You see that on the news every day. You see that every in the news. I see the scene on the TV today. We asked to watch the lady there, we asked to watch the film while they went to eat. Because we just got to eat. There you go again. We've seen it. Anyway, I learned like the hat in church. As soon as I came in here, the ladies have shown us, I take the hat. It's reverent, you know. Even in prison, the church is not locked. The house, the door of the house of God is not locked in prison. You can go in there and pray. So I brought my hat, which I'm going to give to Jim Bear and those of you that want to kindly donate to our cause. Go for it, and we appreciate it. And I love you guys very much. If there's not no more questions, no more questions.
Before we pass the hat, or we have some collection baskets too, there was the mention of the Doctrine of Discovery. And just for a shameless self-promoting plug, in October, over Columbus Day weekend, our church is going to host a conference with a focus on the Doctrine of Discovery. We're going to have a powerful film, followed by a discussion, and then subsequent keynotes and workshops, all dealing with this issue of colonization and the Doctrine of Discovery. So that's October 9th, 10th, and 11th? 10th, 11th, and 12th. See, I was close. So please, if you're around and you have interest, be watching for our website, and there'll be registration for that. One thing that always strikes me whenever I watch this film... This horse ride is a ceremony stretching 16 days and over 330 miles. In Christianity, we don't really have an equivalent to something like this. The closest we can come is like a spiritual pilgrimage. And spiritual pilgrimages are done for the benefit of the self. You would go on a spiritual pilgrimage so that you could benefit. You could find your center, to use overused terminology. Every time I watch this film, and I've seen it over 20 times now, I'm struck by the people who are answering the question, why are you doing this ride? No one ever says, for myself, to better myself. You hear it. We're doing this for the little ones. We're doing this for the families that can't ride. We're doing this for those who are in prison. We're doing this for our people. It's a complete outward focus of these things. And that is such a beautiful demonstration of the native way of being outward focus, that you do these things for others. You don't do them for yourself. And so I want you to carry that with you as we go tonight. This film has brought this beautiful couple all over the world. 2 years ago, I was given the gift of carrying this film and given permission to show it. It's carried me all over the state to show it, to have these kinds of conversations. It is a beautiful gift. And to hear the story of how this film came together, just out of the generosity of people who are drawn to this horse ride, drawn to this film, drawn to these two beautiful people, And so now we're going to pass these baskets. We're going to ask you to join in the continuation of this film going all over the world, for Jim and Alberta to travel all across the country to... they need help with their Sundance that's coming up in 2 weeks. That's a short order. So please, if you're able, give generously. Do you have any final words as we pass the baskets?
Just that I love you guys, and thanks for having me in this beautiful... We had a tour. We got a tour through here, and I said, wow, we couldn't believe how organized you guys are. Where's that lady at? I was, man, this is beautiful. Thank the Creator for what you have. And be grateful. This is beautiful.
I just want to say, again, thank you for being here. Thank you for watching the film and for listening to us. Thank you for my friends and family who came to watch this with us. They're always supportive of us. And thank you, Jim Bear. Wopila.
Would you all join me in thanking Jim and Alberta tonight?